Good morning. Welcome to Focus 580, our morning talk program. My name is David Inge, and we are glad to have you with us. We're also very happy to have back here on the program once again Phil Nixon. He's an extension entomologist at the U of I, and over the years has been generous with his time. He's been on the program a number of occasions to try to help people deal with insect pest problems around the home and in the yard. So if you have some kind of problem, whatever it is, you give us a call and give us the best description so we know what it is that you're talking about. And then Phil, we'll see if he can help you out. And as he has always said over the years, you know, if it's something that you maybe you can manage to live with, okay. But if it's something that you cannot live with, he'll tell you what to do about it. 333-9455 and toll free. 800-222-9455. Any point here, give us a call. Thanks very much for being here.
Glad to be here.
I started out here. I came into the studio and I sat down and I said to Phil, you know, I'd like to talk about termites. And he just sort of starts laughing and he says, yeah, you have them, don't you? And I said, yeah. Yeah, he says, yes, there's nothing like having termites to get you interested in termites. But I was sort of explaining here about the fact that they were in the house and in the basement. Mm-hmm. And it was something that I just kind of stumbled over. I certainly wasn't looking for them. But as you're right, you know, I moved something, and then when I started looking, I realized I knew that I could see the tunnels, and uh-huh. I knew exactly what that was. You don't have to be an entomologist to know when you see that, okay, you got a problem.
Something about the size of a pencil to your finger looking like mud tunnels going up or tubes going up the side.
Yep. And, as I was saying, that there was nothing – if you walked around the house outside, mm-hmm. you're not going to see – anything.
So, sometimes you have them there, sometimes you don't.
And I know that sometimes you do, and that's the thing that you definitely want to look around the foundation to make sure that you don't have them.
Yeah, we recommend people do that a couple times a year. Just do a walk around the house, look at the foundation, particularly behind a bush or behind or whatever you've got that's in the way. See if you've got any tunnels moving up, because that exposed foundation that people don't like to see is there in building codes, partly for that reason. The other part is wood decay.
Yeah. So I'm wondering, well, okay, is there anything that the individual homeowner can do in terms of looking around mm-hmm. so that you don't end up having a problem and, you know, just not seeing it, not knowing about it, and having it get worse and worse to the point where maybe you got real serious damage?
Well, other than walking around the outside and then walking around, if you've got a basement, looking in the on the inside of a foundation, or if a crawl space, if you want to look down in through there, that would be a help, although many people don't like to go down in there. And then above ground, realize that the termites are going to go to the hardwoods in the house. And generally, your house is constructed out of softwoods that have pitch in it, which pine or fir or whatever. And that pitch in those softwoods is an anti-termite feeding material. So they don't particularly care for that. They will feed on it, but they'd rather not. And so you look for the hardwoods in your house. And these are primarily going to be your window frames and your door frames. Tap on those with a screwdriver, see if they sound hollow, see if the screwdriver goes through the wood.
That's mm-hmm. always,
'cause they're not going to eat a hold of the outside. They're going to leave a paper thin layer of wood or maybe just the paint. Same thing on your sill, along where the wood that runs across the top of your foundation before your house starts, on the outside and on the inside. Tap that, see if it's hollow or if your screwdriver goes through it. Be watchful for any tracks that seem to be going up across the walls. Most people are going to have plasterboard on the inside of their house and on their walls, inside walls. And the termites will eat the cardboard facing on that plasterboard. And in the process, they will produce moisture, which will bubble and turn up the paint or turn the paint a little different color. Mm-hmm. And so if you have a different color of paint going up the side, a little trail going up, that's a clue you have termites. And then many times, occasionally checking the attic, if you're up there looking for leaks, make sure things are moisture's getting taken out well. Also look for evidence of termites, tap some wood up there and so on, because many times termites will first show up in the attic of a house.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Maybe we can get back to the treatment options a little bit later. I have a couple callers here, and I think I want to go ahead and get them in.
Fine.
Let's do that. We'll start with someone in Matt Toon on our toll-free line. Line number 4. Hello.
Yes, good morning.
Yeah.
I have a question. I believe they are ants. What is happening is the north side of the house where this rain has come down, the siding between the face brick and the side of the house, It's gotten moist down in there, and there appears that there are ants from about 4 or 5 feet out away from the house on the edge of where the sidewalk starts. I dug around there, and you can just see, like, they keep making a little army trail and going up to the house and then finding different spots along the face brick where they can get in there. Now they've gotten into the house, and I was wondering if there's any way that she put something down on the outside and get rid of them, or would it suggest? I've tried to cover up as much as I can on the face brick, keep them out. It's due to be repaired sometime this summer when they can get the job done, but between now and then, is there anything I can do to stop those ants from coming in if they are ants?
Are these ants a quarter of an inch or larger, or are they and black or smaller than that?
They're very small.
Okay.
They might be an eighth of an inch or less, real small, kind of a light-colored ant.
Chances are the nest is either in that area where you find it to be or down in the soil. These sound like foundation ants, or also known as yellow ants. And they will... The easiest way, best way to control those is typically to bait for them inside the house. These ants, also known as citronella ants, are very much attracted to sweets, and so then you want to go with a sweet bait, which would be either taro ant bait or Grant's ant bait. If that doesn't seem to work, and then for the other listeners, most ants are going to be at this time of year building colony, and they're going to be looking for protein, so-called grease ants, and those are going to be best controlled with combat ant baits. It's a difference in what the bait material is. You can bait around the outside, but I normally don't recommend that, although it's commonly done. There are outside baits along that you can put around the foundation that you can purchase in local stores, and they should be effective, hardware stores, etc. But the reason I tend to not recommend it as much is because there's a lot of – we have 90 different species of ants in Illinois, and probably only about 15 or so of them are likely to – and actually really only about 5 or 6 are actually going to be inside the house. So if you're outside baiting ants outdoors, for the most part, you're baiting and killing ants that are not going to be a problem to your house, not going to come into your house. And as a result, you're disrupting, in my opinion, you're disrupting the ecosystem outside and just making it more likely to have some other problems. So I don't – it's the outside baits are available. They're fine. You can use them. I just personally have a problem with them.
Okay. I understand that. What appears to me, they're the same answer in the house or what's come in. I was trying to stop them off before they got in the house.
Well, but you indicated they already are in the house, so that's probably the best way to do it. If you just seen them along the outside and so on – Then the outside baits would have been particularly planted, put right where those ants are located, are likely to just get those ants and none of the others. But sometimes people want to just put them around a house and leave them there all season long, figuring the only good ant is a dead ant, and that's not really true.
No, I agree with that wholeheartedly.
Okay.
Well, thanks for
information. You're welcome.
Right, thank you. Let's go to caller in Paris, line one. Hello.
Good morning, Phil.
Howdy.
I actually have 3 questions for you.
Okay.
You was talking about termites hitting hardwood home. What about hardwood mulch that people are putting around their houses?
As long as you don't put it so deep that it, if you don't put it shallow enough so that it dries out between rains, which has kind of been hard to do in the last month and a half, but at any rate, we recommend usually 1.5-2 inch deep mulch, certainly no deeper than 3 inches, because if that mulch does stay moist, it will attract termites. And however, it's probably not going to attract termites unless the termites get within 3 or 4 feet of it anyway. And we normally figure that if they're that close, they're going to find a house regardless.
Right.
But best we can tell, termites don't find their food from a very far distance through the soil, but they are attracted to rotting wood. And whether you have hardwood mulch or softwood mulch, they will be attracted to it if it's damp and rotting. If we were going to be absolutely perfect against termites, we probably wouldn't have any mulch along the foundation. But a good trade-off is having it such that it doesn't stay constantly moist and is rotting and putting out all those nice chemicals saying, here, termite, here.
Yeah. Okay, great. That actually answered 2 of my questions, because I was going to ask you about the other kind of mulch also. Okay, second question, scale onion wannamus on winter creeper. How would you treat that?
We just kind of passed the time in central Illinois for treating for, Ioannima scale. It's still proper time in the Chicago metro area and northern Illinois. We would recommend with that, you're probably going to get your best control with acephate, which is sold as Orthene, and you may not get as good a control as you might hope for, because the crawlers, which are lemon yellow and about pinhead sized or less, actually pinpoint size, about size of a period at the end of a sentence, they'll be out typically in, they would have been out about 2 weeks ago. They're settling down now. Should probably still get some control for the Orthene, because it's got some systemic activity, goes inside the plant as well as being a contact control. And then you may not be able to do much other, if that doesn't take care of a problem, dry a dormant oil spray during the wintertime when the temperature is going to stay above freezing for 24 hours.
My next question.
And that would that will help kill off this insect over winter. These insects, when you kill them, aren't going to fall off. For the rest of the listeners, you're going to see them look like eighth-inch long white streaks on the leaves and on the stems. And then if you look on the stems, you'll see some eighth-inch long oyster shell-shaped brown individuals. Those are the females. The white dashes are the males. And they don't fall off when they're killed. The way you can tell whether they're controlled, the easy way is to look for new growth. If there's no scale on a new growth, then they're not reproducing.
Cool. Okay, last question. Wood bees.
Uh-huh.
We have wood bees in our garage.
Yeah, wood bees or carpenter bees will get in through primarily unpainted wood surfaces. Prevention involves painting the surface or covering it with some sort of coating type varnish, moisture protectant, but actually
a
coating stain. Yeah, polyurethane or paint. That is preventative. To get rid of the ones you have now, you want to use Carbaryl, sold as 7, dust form.
Say that again?
Carbaryl, which is, you're going to buy it as 7, S-E-V-I-N,
okay.
Dust,
okay.
D-U-S-T.
Okay.
And you put the 7 dust in and around the opening lightly, so that as the female bee is coming and going, she'll pick this up on her hair, and then she'll groom herself, her mouth parts, and inject the dry dust.
Cool. Okay.
Then you caulk up the openings once it starts to get cold in the fall, because those, if she's got, she's probably got some young
pain at the end.
She's got
the fall.
Yeah, uh-huh. She's got some cells that probably have pollen in them and eggs laid in them, and those eggs will go ahead and hatch and the larvae develop up. Pupae come out as adult bees, and if you've got the original hole open, they will go out through that hole. If you caulk that hole, they will make their own hole. So instead of having one hole, you may have 5 or 6 holes in a nice row. So you wait until those have emerged. Those usually come out in July or August. So time you get into September, October, caulk up a hole, then paint it, and you're all set for spring.
Good deal. Thanks.
All right. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Our guest this morning here on Focus 580, Phil Nixon. He's extension entomologist at U of I and is here to try to help with insect pest problems around the homes. Could be something inside. Could be something in the home, garden, or landscape. Just call in, tell us what it is, and he'll tell you what to do about it. 333-9455. Toll free, 800-222-9455. Next caller's in Belgium. Line number 2. Hello.
Good morning to you all. I have 2 questions. First one is, why don't termites ever bother trees?
They do.
Well, they will eat a live tree.
They eat the dead part of a live tree.
Oh.
Okay. So they'll eat dead roots down underneath the ground. They will tunnel up the center of the trunk, which is going to be dead xylem tissue and pith, and will feed on that. They normally aren't going to... they're not going to get into the live part of a tree. They are nature recyclers. They get rid of the dead trees in the forest, and it's really not their fault that we chose to build our houses out of dead trees. They're just recycling that. So that's kind of their deal, but they will eat the dead parts of live trees, although normally they're not going to be very numerous, and occasionally we'll get a situation in live trees. They'll even get into other things. Occasionally we'll get a call of them feeding in the old woody stems of geraniums and the woody root bases of rhubarb. So they'll get into anything that's dead cellulose, essentially, is all they care about. I've got some nice photos of them tunneling in an unabridged dictionary in my office. So it wasn't my dictionary, but yeah, anything that's dead wood is fair game.
Well, they don't like live wood.
No, they're not going to be a problem in live wood.
I wonder why that is. It's all the same stuff, isn't it?
It's all the same stuff, but there's a difference in moisture content, which probably has something to do with it. More likely, the live wood is going to be have other chemicals in it that are anti-termite feedings. Realize that termites and trees just didn't quite show up there. They've kind of co-evolved, and for trees to stay alive, they've had to figure out ways to combat termites eating the live parts of them, the important parts for them. And for the termites to stay alive, they've had to make sure that they didn't kill all the trees off or else they don't have any future food. So, you know, it's a trade-off and something that's gone back and forth probably. Termites first are found in the fossil record about the latter part of the dinosaur era. So they've been doing this for about 80 million years.
I see. And one other question. I work with wood, and I notice I get powder post beetles, mm-hmm. and they seem to affect mainly walnut. But they, you know, you don't usually see them in several of the other species, but they really like walnut a lot, especially the sapwood of walnut. Can you tell me anything about how to kill them after the wood is, you know, I've already got the wood dry and everything. How would I go about killing them after, so that I don't send the powder post beetles on to the customer?
You can kill powder post beetles inside wood with heat treatment or cold treatment. If a wood has been what we would recommend for a small piece of wood in when somebody finds it in indoors, that's been under room temperatures and the beetles have not adapted to cooling temperatures, is that they can just put this in a plastic bag and put it in their freezer for 3 days and everything's dead inside. A similar thing can be done by heating that wood up to 130 degrees Fahrenheit and holding it for 30 minutes. What is normally done in your type of situation is that you may have hire people to fumigate the wood. Generally, what they will do is take a trailer, they'll put the wood in it, they'll cover it with a tarp, and they use a gas that will kill all of the insects inside the wood. This is a professional job because they're using some of the same gases they use to kill people in gas chambers. So that's you got to know what you're doing, obviously. As far as if you air dry wood or maintain wood, if you keep your wood in areas that has window screening on it, you will keep the powder post beetles from attacking in the first place.
Okay, and you did mention something that sounds like it. I'm going to ask if this is a possibility. I have a solar kiln. I draw my. If I get the interior of the pile up above 130 degrees, that should kill them, right?
That's correct.
Oh, good. I can do it that way.
Okay, and then for other people, generally, why we don't have powder post beetles generally in our houses and so on is that they do not attack varnished or painted wood surfaces. So that's how you keep them from attacking your own property after you've already got it. For some of the other listeners,
and you said, and as I pointed out, they seem to like walnut better. Is that true? Or?
They'll have a tendency to prefer hardwoods again for the same reasons the termites prefer hardwoods. The pitch in softwoods is going to be an anti-termite feedant. And just like on termites, who will feed primarily in the spring wood in the heartwood and not feed on the rings or the summer wood. The summer wood has a higher concentration of tannins and other types of compounds which are anti-insect feedant materials, both termites and powder post beetles. So the powder post beetles will prefer the softwood, or the spring wood, the lighter wood, which is not, rather than the heartwood, because of the amount of tannins that's associated with a heartwood. They avoid that.
Thank you very much, sir.
All right, mm-hmm. Thank you for the call. Just one quick question when I'm still thinking about it, about mulch. It seems to me that at least the around my house, the mulch that I've been using is a commercial product. Mm-hmm. So it's not like I'm making my own.
Right.
And that it's either been cedar or pine bark. Is that going to be – and I guess my thought was, well, that's supposed to have something in that really discourages insects. They don't like it as much.
Well, I keep hearing that. But the other side of a coin is that the Centricon system, which is used as termite bait baiting product, one of the major ones, Xteras, and there's a couple others that are also major. But the Centricon baiting system uses a piece of pine board in their bait trap. Okay?
Okay.
bottom line is, as long as that wood is decaying, it's attractive. Certainly hardwood mulch would be more attractive than softwood, but my contention is after it's laid out there for 6 or 8 months and started to decay, it's all fair game.
All right. So, again, the thing is you certainly don't want it up against the house, and you're saying as long as it's not so deep that it stays wet.
Right, right. Yeah, you can have it up to the foundation, but have it no more than an inch and a half or so deep, 2 inches at the most, 3 inches at the very most. You know, it's the same type of recommendations that Sandy Mason and there are people in extension because I've brainwashed them that direction.
Okay, very good. That's your job.
That's right.
That's your job. We have several callers here. Phil Nixon is our guest. He's an extension entomologist at the U of I. And in fact, yes, if Sandy can't answer the question, those sorts of folks, the next person they go to is this guy right here, Phil Nixon. So if you have insect problems, give us a call and he will do his best to help you out. Next person in line here is in Monticello, line one. Hello.
Hi, yeah, I've got just noticed in my office on campus some little red bugs about the size of a pinhead. They're bright orange red. I was just wondering what they are and if I need to be worried about them.
Chances are these are clover mites. I'm guessing that they're closer to south and west windows than anywhere else in your office.
Right, a west window.
All right. These are clover mites are going to feed on clover and grasses, and particularly if a grass comes right up to the foundation. When it gets hot, and if you remember, we had some really nasty weather late last week with, in my opinion, high temperatures and so on, and that was probably getting hot enough for the clover mites to start looking for a place to spend the summer when it's real hot outside, and then they'll go back out later when the temperature cools off, and then come in when it's real cold in the winter, too. But they will come in around cracks and crevices, come up the sides of buildings. They're not going to cause any harm because they're plant feeders. They're not going to bite you. You can kill them on contact with soapy water. You can spray them with an aerosol flying and crawling insect spray, and that works well in cracks and crevices. Caulking the cracks and crevices around the windows will help keep them from coming in. And what we primarily recommend for homeowners who have control over the foundation is to put a loose area of soil that's 2 to 3 feet wide alongside the foundation, particularly on the south and west sides, which is where mites tend to come in most. And the mites, as they come to the building, will find all that nice new loose soil, and they'll hide there rather than come all the way to the building. And, of course, to a gardener, that 2 to 3 foot wide area of loose soil means flower bed, which is fine. And so with you being in a university building, you can't go make a flower bed next to your foundation, but at least you may be able to get facilities and services to caulk around the windows and so on.
Hey, thank you very much.
All right. You're welcome.
Have a good one.
All right, thank you for the call. Well, next we'll go to someone in Champaign. This is line four. Hello. Is the caller there, line four?
Hi.
Yeah, go ahead.
Hi, I think I also wanted to ask about clover mites, and you just answered it.
Okay.
Yeah, in my car. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Right. Well, very good then. Well, we got two in
there. Nothing like answering before they're asked.
And then that means next, the caller is in Savoy, line three.
Hi.
Hi, yeah.
This is about carpenter ants mainly, but we also have been diagnosed to have termites. So the termite solution powder or what spray goes around the house close to the foundation regularly, but on the deck that's over 25 years old and painted wood, we've been treating with 7-dust on the holes for the carpenter ants, but we haven't been successful, and we had about 25-30 adults buzzing around fighting, and we've finally vacuumed them into a poison solution. And we're in that process. But we're also concerned about, we just cleaned the deck with water pressure and then some bleach because there's also some green stuff once in a while. And then have, over the years, treated it with seal, wood seal. Never have gotten into the painting thing. But now we're noticing all finished, there's a lot of sawdust on this clean floor. And I'm puzzled whether that's still from the carpenter ants, or is that something that the termites might even be making all of that wood dust?
Well, termites aren't going to leave any wood shavings to the outside because the termite colony is underground. And the termites that come up into your house or deck or wherever are going to haul back the pieces of wood that they collect back to the colony where it is consumed. So they're not going to leave any wood shavings that way. The carpenter ants leave a lot of wood shavings behind because they don't eat wood. They just hollow it out to live in it.
Mm-hmm.
They feed on exudates from insects and other things and other debris and so on out in nature. So they will leave a lot of sawdust directly under the opening to their nest. And that will be essentially the size of the mouth parts of a carpenter ant, and so these tend to be little wood chips that are about a 16th of an inch long. Typically,
mm-hmm.
is what you're going to be looking at. Carpenter ants, for other listeners, they're going to be about a quarter of an inch long and black as wingless workers. Winged individuals are a quarter to three quarters of an inch long, depending on whether you're looking at a smaller male or large female. Because they don't eat the wood, the amount of damage is relatively limited to a couple feet along a 2x4 for a nest. And once you've figured out where the colony is, many times what I'll recommend is you can either replace the wood, or if the wood seems to be relatively sound otherwise, then you can drill in several holes in that area of the nest area, and you can tell where the nest area is because it's going to sound hollow when you tap on it. And then there are some insecticides still that will come with a very thin nozzle on them. And if they're meant for this type of treatment, ant and roach spray or flying and crawling insect spray, putting that nozzle in through that hole and shooting it in there will help control the situation and eliminate the ant nest.
You're talking about carpenter ants, right?
That's correct.
I'd like to repeat this part. Thin nozzle, anti-flying insect type of
ant thing. roach or flying and crawling insect spray, yes.
And is there that's enough information to be able to go on?
Yeah, there'll be various types of pyrethroids, and I could give you chemical names, but you probably wouldn't find it on the label. What they have a tendency to do is, I know the chemical.
Excuse me.
They put out a big long chemical name, which I don't remember. I remember the generic names, but those typically aren't on those type of products anyway, so it didn't be a whole lot of good look for it.
So, can you name a brand or not?
It'll be one of the main brands, like Ortho or Raid or any of those. These various companies tend to put about the same products in their various materials.
Oh, okay. And so spray that in the holes, and we don't mm-hmm. have to. Putting any more 7 on the edges or?
No, the 7 dust around the opening would probably be somewhat effective, but the problem is that this works, the 7 dust works well on bees and wasps and so on because they have hairs on their body to help collect pollen. And whereas ants don't, they have hairs in their body, but they're not branched like they are on bees. And they're not as numerous as they are on wasps, and so they just don't pick up that much of a dust to probably be effective.
Now, if I made a mistake and said carpenter ants instead of carpenter bees, these are flying things.
Okay, yeah, you mentioned carpenter ants.
Oh, okay.
Carpenter bees, you do use a 7 dust because there you do have a hairy body that they will pick
mm-hmm.
it up and will normally kill off the individual that's establishing the colony. And in that type of situation, you do the best you can, and then caulk the holes in the fall of the year. And I would recommend that if you're getting a lot of these, that you can seriously consider painting the deck because the paint most of the time will keep the bees from reattacking, whereas water treatments and so on do not.
And would you tell me again what kind of paint, and then how to take care of that. Since we've changed to carpenter bees, we're talking about these shavings on the floor. Is that to be expected?
That's to be expected as well. That's an indication they're making the colony larger, tunneling back in deeper. They can go as much as a couple feet down a board to make these areas. And you're just wanting to go to a reputable paint dealer and ask them for their recommendations as far as an appropriate paint for a deck that's going to be out and exposed to the wet as much as it is.
Uh-huh.
The paint, you're more important to get one that will hang on that wood and work well for the wood that you've got. Any paint that is going to provide a solid surface that the carpenter bees are not likely to attack through. So it's not very particular on the type of paint from a bee standpoint. You want to get the right paint for the location you're putting that paint on.
Mm-hmm. Is it hard to get that paint to stick to where the wood treatment that we've already put on the seal?
Once that wood treatment's dry, it should accept the paint again. But again, working with your paint dealer is your best source of information for that type of guidance.
Okay. Thank you for this lengthy explanation.
That's fine.
I appreciate it.
Well, thank you. Our guest this morning here on Focus 580, Phil Nixon. He's an extension entomologist at the U of I. Every once in a while, he's here on the program to help with insect pest problems inside the house or around in the yard and in the garden. Questions are welcome, 333-9455 and toll-free 800-222-9455. Sullivan, the next caller. Line 2. Hello.
Yeah. Are you familiar from termites?
Yes. Uh-huh.
Okay. Do they build nests in a wall?
Not the termites that occur in this part of the country, don't. In the Gulf Coast states area and in the southern half of California, they do. But it's too cold here for those kind of termites. We don't have Formosan or dampwood termites in this part of the country.
I have a home down south, and I was wondering, what kind of wood spray would you use to spray on them?
We recommend for termite treatment, although I recommend a lot of do-it-yourself things, I feel that termite treatment for a house involves getting professionals involved. There are barrier treatments in which the insecticide is put down alongside the foundation of the house underground, or there are also bait treatments in which the baits are placed around the house. And the most effective baits, which are standalone termite control, can only be obtained through commercial pest control companies. Baits that you can buy in hardware stores and so on are not a standalone treatment. They're meant to be used associated with barrier type treatment. So barrier treatment or bait, either one is fine. The baits are going to cost a little bit more. They use less insecticide, but they take more labor to maintain them. But still, you're looking at, for a typical house, somewhere in the range of a couple thousand dollars to have your house protected from termites.
Okay, you see some of them in Florida, shall we say, these bait stations and whatever, orthomakes or whatever.
Right, well, they use the same bait stations here for those. Yeah, those are subterranean termite bait stations.
Okay, are they effective or not?
Yes, they are.
Thank you, sir.
All right, thank you. Just I confessed my termite issues a little bit earlier in the program, and I don't know if people were listening. Somebody from one of the major companies come out, and we talked a little bit, and he said, well, you've got your two alternatives. Mm-hmm. You can put the insecticide into the soil around the foundation. So effectively what you're doing is it's like a moat. It's mm-hmm. a barrier
right,
between,
a barrier.
And they're living in the soil, so you want to put the barrier there, or you do this other thing with the bait stations, and then they put in an active agent, which is not an insecticide. I guess it's
it's just
growth.
An attractant, actually, to, first they'll put in a material right. that may be a slab of wood, or it may be sawdust, or it may be corrugated cardboard, and that attracts termites that are in the immediate area in there, and once they start coming in, then they will replace it with a bait, and depending on the company involved, generally what's used in there are going to be insect growth regulators, mm-hmm. which are, because termites are always gathering food and taking it back to the colony where mom and the kids are, this is taken back to the colony, and what it will do is it will disrupt the colony. It increases the amount of hormone. It's a synthetic hormones or what they are, and this messes up the hormone balance in the colony, causes them to not produce enough workers or have them have troubles. More recent ones, the young ones as they're growing up are not able to molt sufficiently and so they die as immatures. The bottom line is you end up killing off a colony and eliminate the threat to your house that direction, whereas the barrier treatment will keep the termites out for about 10 years and then that material breaks down and then termites can attack, but generally colonies in this part of the country only last maybe up to 20 years anyway, so you're in pretty good shape that way. The baits have to be replaced from time to time, so they tend to be more expensive, but once you've killed off that colony, may not be attacked again. However, you may have another termite colony in the area that will then attack later, and you have no protection once those baits are removed versus having the barrier, which will last you for 10 years, regardless which colony attacks. So it's an apples and oranges thing. It's something that whichever – both of them are effective. Both of them work well. Both of them are about the same in effectiveness. Both are similar in price. And it's more up to the individual what they just like to like better than another.
All right. Well, let's get back to the phones here, and next we'll talk with someone in Champaign, line one. Hello.
Hi. This is a follow up on a carpenter bee question. I would prefer not to use chemicals. So I've got a return of a carpenter bee apparently from last year. Went back to the same spot, and one thing I had read is that you can fill the hole with steel wool and then putty it, and then, as you said, paint it. Would there be any point in doing that now, or is it best to wait, as you said, until the end of the season?
I think it's best to wait, because what will happen is, and we have some people in the state, which I quite understand how well they think, but every year I'll get a few calls in the latter part of the summer saying, we had these wood bees or carpenter bees, and I got rid of them by caulking up the hole. And now I've got three or four, six holes all in a row down this board. And I thought I killed them when I caulked it up. I says, well, you know, you've got young bees that are living in there. They're going to grow up. And just like mom, they can eat right through solid wood. So if the opening is there, they'll all go out mom's opening. If it's not there, then they'll each make their own hole. And so instead of having one hole that you put up with for the season, you end up getting four, five, six, seven later in the season, all in a nice straight row where mom built their tunnels. And so I recommend leaving the tunnel open until you get into September, October, then caulk it and go off the paint. Now, of course, the paint is a chemical answer too, but most people don't look at that as a chemical.
Right.
But it certainly is.
Right. Well, but I have pets in the area, yeah. And I just prefer not to.
Yeah. Well, the 7-Dust that I recommend is commonly used. 7-Dust is one of the more common components of flea control products to be used directly on pets.
Right.
So we're not looking at anything which is terribly difficult. But on the other side of a coin, yeah, waiting until the fall and then caulking and painting is an option without using any of the insecticides.
The other thing that I had read is, of course, there's the problem of bees disappearing, and so, you know, there's feeling about not doing away with bees who are beneficial in other ways. But
and certainly these are very important pollinators. Carpenter bees are great pollinators in the years that in the 80s, mid-80s, in which we lost many of our feral colonies of European honeybees. I saw a great increase in carpenter bees to kind of fill the gap of pollinating, and they are important pollinators. And there are other bees that are also important pollinators, bumblebees, leafcutter bees, mason bees, etc., that are all native and all have their own place. My feeling is that if you protect your house, there's plenty of rotting wood out there and some trees, dead tree branches and some rotting stumps and so on, that the carpenter bees can take advantage of on a natural basis to be able to maintain their population. So what you do to kill bees on your house or on your carport or fence or something has an impact, but it's probably you're not decimating the population. They're finding various natural sites as well.
Okay, great. Well, thank you very much.
All right, mm-hmm. Very good. We have about 10 minutes left. Again, our guest this morning, Phil Nixon. If you have questions about insect pest problems in the home, literally inside the house or in the yard, in the garden, you can give us a call, 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. Next up, Champaign, line 3. Hello.
Hi, guys.
Yeah.
Hey, we took down an apple tree this spring, and I left the trunk up. It's just beautiful. It's a beautiful mm-hmm. work of natural art.
Mm-hmm.
About 15 feet from the house, and I left it up about 8 feet high. It's a nice, beautiful bird's nest in there and different things.
Mm-hmm.
So just the trunk. Am I inviting disaster? In terms of,
it depends how you look at it. I guess one way of telling is that how I would look at it is about is about 15 years ago, a big silver maple fell over in my yard. I live in the country. It fell in the front yard. It's still laying there. We've had a possum's nest in it. We've had various types of, I maintain mason bees to pollinate my fruit trees. I imagine they're living in it to a great extent. Various other things. It's probably, in my case, 50 feet from the house. Certainly, a dead stump like that, a dead trunk, will be something that carpenter ants will colonize, and then they may move from that into your house to forage primarily. As long as you don't have moist wood, they're not likely to start up another colony. Well, you can't have an accessory colony inside the wall, but it's, again, carpenter ants normally don't do a whole lot of damage to a building. They're usually not very, very numerous as far as nests inside a maintained building. So I would feel that, you know, if you want to leave it there and have some space for birds to nest in, things of this nature, that's fine. Certainly you are inviting some pest problems, but not super major nasty things that are just because you did that. Certainly a person that has a pile of firewood in this, about the same distance from a house is producing every bit as much of a problem as that standing trunk.
Okay.
All right?
All right, thank you.
All right, very good. And next we will talk with someone in Urbana. Line number two. Hello.
Oh, good morning.
Mm-hmm.
We've had, for the last 9 years, problem with flying ants every May or June. And they're a real nuisance just because they can fly. It's just the soap and water trick just doesn't work.
Yeah, vacuuming the windows where they all tend to congregate works pretty well, but still they're a pain, yeah.
That's all you can recommend.
We have them. We had them for years outside our back door, and for about a week, my wife and I would take giant steps going in and out of the house, so we didn't step on too many of them as we went in and out of the back door. So, but most people don't look at bugs quite the way we do. We're both biologists. So,
the problem is they fly towards the light and
yes,
then fall down into your food.
Yes, they will. but generally, if you find they're going to be coming from wingless individuals, workers, and if they're inside, coming out inside your house, you probably are having somewhere in the house where those ants are present, and using some of the baits that I mentioned earlier, combat ant bait, or if that doesn't work, then the taro or Grant's ant bait should give you control for those to where you don't end up getting the winged individuals. Occasionally you can have a foundation ant nest or something right next to the foundation on the outside, which will cause winged individuals inside. And then if you want to do some, like I mentioned, the outside baiting in this situation might be appropriate, or as I mentioned before, when they show up, you notice typically they'll show up for a couple, 3 days in a row in the early morning hours. If you just recognize that point and vacuum them, they'll probably be mainly on the east-facing windows that got light most in the wind.
No, they don't congregate anywhere. They just fly around the room.
Okay, all right.
And I don't know what you mean by bait. We have a dog, and so I hate putting poisons in the house.
Well, these baits, particularly the combat ant bait and the grand ant baits, are sold in packaged plastic bait stations that are about 2 inches in square, and will, let's put it this way, even a 4-year-old with a little screwdriver set would probably take at least 15, 20 minutes to get into one of these things.
I see. Where
so they're hard to get into, and then you can also keep them from the dogs getting to them by putting them back behind things that the dogs can't reach, such as behind cabinets and behind bookcases, things of this nature, so that although a dog can easily crunch one of these up and chew it up, most of them aren't going to do that. And then if you keep them to where they're not reachable by the pets, that should also help protect them.
So you could put them up on top of bookcases.
Yeah, wherever you see the ants trailing is where you want to put these baits.
Oh, well, I don't see them trailing. That's the problem.
Okay, all right.
I've really looked.
Well, what you may want to do is if you want to catch some of the ants and take them to your local extension office, if they can identify what kind of ant they are, they will eventually get to me either as photographs in our distance diagnostic system, or they may send me the specimens. So
I have taken them to pest control, and they've said they're very typical, and they've given me some stuff to spray the skirting boards, and eventually it gets rid of it. But I'm just wondering if I can prevent them coming into the house, because I hate to see these things just dying on
on my food table.
That's why I'm recommending you take them to your University of Illinois Extension office, because we will, rather than glance at them and say, oh, those are common ants, we'll identify what they really are, and we may be able to give you a little bit of insight as to where these ants normally nest and give you some hope in helping to stop from getting in.
Okay, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Right, very good. We'll just keep on here, take as many callers as we can, and talk next with someone in Champaign, line one. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I have just a quick question. I have a neighbor here in town who has started raising honeybees, and I'm very supportive of trying to help bees and all that, but I have two questions. One, the hive is right up against our shared property line, and I've got kids. And I know the bees are not aggressive, but I just want to, you know, is it safe that close, literally a couple feet away? We have a lot of flowers in our yard. And the other question is just, is that allowed to have them in town? And I will hang up and listen.
All right.
Okay, generally throughout the state, honeybees are allowed. In the Chicago metro area, there are a couple counties which look at honeybees as being domestic animals, livestock. And they have ordinances that require you to have at least 5 acres to have any type of livestock. So places like DuPage County, you can't have bees like this. But generally throughout the rest of the state, you can. So that's a legal thing. Bees are normally not going to be very aggressive unless somebody throws rocks at their colony or gets too close to the colony. Typically with domestic bees, too close is 3 to 5 feet. This is an opportunity, as I see it, to educate your children about the usefulness of insects, but also how to protect yourself from getting stung. Don't throw things at the bees. Don't squish the bees. Don't do things. These things. If you have a concern with them, bees will tend to fly, and I've gotten stung before just by walking across a field because there were hives close by, and bees fly no higher than they have to. So they may fly across and just fly into you, and if they get caught in your hair, they'll sting, which is what happened to me one time. I was going to a beekeeper's meeting, as a matter of fact. And so there was bees there, obviously. What you can do, though, is any type of bushes or a fence that will cause the bees to fly up to get above head height, they will then not fly into you as they fly across. And so you may want to work with your neighbor to work out some deal that way if you have a concern about the bees flying into you.
Okay. Well, I hope that helps. We have one more caller here at least, and this is someone in Danville, line 3. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes.
I have a question about yellow jackets. My husband is quite allergic to them, and are they pollinators? I mean, would destroying...
Oh, yes.
They are. Oh, dear.
Oh, they're a double benefit. They feed their larvae meat, and that meat is primarily caterpillars in this time of the year. So they're great at eliminating caterpillars, many of which are pests of our plants. And then in addition, they feed themselves on flower nectar, which in the process of collecting flower nectar, they're good pollinators. So, yes, they're a double benefit, as a matter of fact. But on the other side of a coin, more people are killed by yellow jacket stings in this country than pretty much anything else. And somewhere around 45 to 50 people a year, they are much more apt to sting than other bees or wasps. And so there are definitely downsides to it. I would say you need to remain vigilant for nests. They will be starting their nests this time of year. And yellow jackets, which are half-inch long yellow and black wasps, look kind of, people call them bees, but they're really not. They're a wasp. Going in and out of cracks and crevices and foundations or eave areas, you can put carbaryl 7 dust around those openings. Or if they're down tunneling into the soil, they'll use an old rodent burrow. Then you can flush the colony with insecticide, liquid 7 mixed up with water or other insecticide. But, yeah, they're very beneficial, but they have very serious bad side to them as well.
Well, in view of the fact that he had to seek medical attention for this, I feel like I need to come down on his side, whether they're good pollinators or not.
And of all the bees and wasps out there, all of them would be sensitive to all of those. However, the yellow jacket is the most likely by far to sting somebody with very little, if any, provocation.
Well, and so, there were several that attacked him at the same time, so he must have been near a nest.
Yeah, he probably was. And what you need to do is you may be able to live and let live on some of the others, but declare war on Yellow Jackets, and your actions would be well placed.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Mm-hmm. One more caller here, I think, on line number four, the toll-free line. Hello.
Yeah, I'm back with us for most of termites. Do they go down in the ground and come back up, or do they always remain in the building?
Formosa termites live also, they're a subterranean termite as well as providing carton nests above ground. Again, they are a subtropical termite, and we don't have them any farther north, to my knowledge, than Louisiana, maybe southern Mississippi. So they do not occur in Illinois, but they will occur both as a subterranean and inside a wall. They'll make what they call a carton nest, which is made out of wood fibers.
But they do not have to return to the ground, is that correct?
No, they do not. Not in very humid, warm areas like Louisiana, New Orleans area particularly. They find carton nests inside trees, inside walls of buildings, et cetera, fairly commonly.
Thank you, sir.
Uh-huh. Thanks. So that just to review, the kind of termites that we have here, they actually live. The nest is in the soil down quite deep.
Exactly.
And they're coming into the house. They're looking for food.
They're gathering wood.
They're gathering wood. So that's where they're taking the wood, and then they're taking it back to the nest where they are, where they eat it.
And the eastern subterranean termite, which is a termite we have a problem with, needs high moisture, 97.5%. relative humidity type moisture. Mm. And so you can find them above ground, but they're going to be in something that stays very wet and stays warm and doesn't freeze out during the wintertime. For instance, we found them, you can find them in piles of mulch in greenhouses, sitting on the floor, something that stays moist and doesn't get real cold, things of that nature. They'll move into, sometimes a colony may move into a mass of a pile of mulch outside for the summer, but that would winter kill in the wintertime.
Mm-hmm. So, and the reason they build those tunnels is that they need to maintain that high humidity around
exactly.
them. So they don't want to be out in the open. That's why they make those tunnels, so they can go in and out and maintain that high moisture level,
yeah.
which they like.
Yeah, they're soft-bodied. They lose moisture very quickly. If you open up a termite nest or tunnels or damaged wood, you go back 30 minutes later, all the termites are dead. They've died from lack of moisture that quick.
Right. Okay, well, we're going to leave it at that for right now with Phil. If people have insect pest questions, in the meantime, call your local extension person. Like, if you're in Champaign-Ford County, you call Sandy Mason, her office, or look for the person who's near you in the book, and they can help you out. And if they can't answer the question, then Phil is the guy that they call.
Mm-hmm.
And probably a little bit later on the summer, you come back, we'll do it again.
Be glad to.
Phil Nixon, he's an extension entomologist here at the University of Illinois.